Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hey, hello.
Derek.
Good day, sir.
What's happening?
Not much. It's today was one of the nicest days so far this spring.
Right?
It's
T-shirt weather.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost time to get the flip-flops and the thong out.
Yeah, and at work they're telling me, well, yeah, it's nice today, but it's supposed to snow tomorrow. It's like, what? Maybe not down here, but a little bit further north.
Yeah, maybe north. Yeah. Huntsville Way had some snow this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. Yep. Oh, well. Doesn't affect me none.
Nope.
Not right now. So, yeah, it's been nice. It's nice to be getting some of the jackets off during the...
I know.
You know, it's a time of year where you're... Grab all those jackets, put them in the car just in case you need them.
I know, right?
Right, yeah. Take the dog for a walk at 6 in the morning and you got the extra heavy hoodie on. And then by the time you're going to work, I guess I really don't need the heavy hoodie.
Supposed to be -1 tonight.
Yeah, it gets chillier in the evenings and overnight. And then in the morning it warms up and good times.
Yeehaw. And the days are getting longer.
Yes, I'm driving to work in the daylight. I am coming home in the daylight.
Yeah.
None of this darkness to darkness thing. Was sure if day was really happening outside my office. I don't have a window anymore.
So. Oh, no?
No.
They
no,
took when the they, window away?
Oh, a few years ago, they remodeled our entire building.
Yeah.
And so they shifted. I don't know who built the building to begin with, but the windows weren't evenly spaced.
Oh.
So they... started redoing the offices, and that includes some of the brickwork and the wall. And they did a couple of the windows, moved a couple of them, and mine.
Now you don't have a window.
My window left the building.
Wow.
So I have, no window to the outside world. So I don't know what's going on outside. Yeah. Things could be happening out there, and I wouldn't know.
Well, that kind of sucks.
Yes and no. Because then they don't catch me just drifting off, looking outside, dreaming of better days.
Yeah. Oh, it reminds me of your high school. As you know, going into summer, heading towards the end of the year, you're in June, and the school windows are open because nobody air conditioned schools. And so the lawnmower guy would go by, and it's like, oh, freshly cut lawn.
Right?
It's a nice smell unless you're pushing the lawnmower. If somebody else is driving the lawnmower or pushing the lawnmower, it's a nice smell.
I remember one year my grandfather was visiting when we lived out in Alberta. And we had one of those push mowers.
Mm-hmm.
So he hooked a rope up to it and made us take turns pulling while he guided. And the big blade just turned, right, sort of deal?
Yeah, teach a dog to pull the
right? Every time I see a lawnmower now, one of those push mowers, I feel the urge to run.
Pavlov's dog.
The Iditarod of lawn maintenance.
That's hilarious.
Why should I do all the work? Get one of these young kids to pull
it.
I
know,
it
and, right?
Man was a genius. Other than that, I'm starting to plan some trips and stuff for the summer.
Yes, me too.
What? I think the earliest is May. And I got one in June.
Yeah.
Nothing in July yet. Got a big one in August. Big one in October.
I got one in the second week of May so far. Going to Algonquin. Bunch of guys from work. Should be fun.
Not Vic weekend? Victoria?
No. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Okay.
Yeah, Tuesday through Saturday.
Why wouldn't you include Sunday?
It's Mother's Day.
Yeah, I guess you got it. Yeah. Well, your wife's not your mom.
Exactly. She's not my mother.
So that's the kids' issues. But I guess the guys, you're there.
Well, yeah. Well, it's their idea. It's like, well, we got to be back on Saturday because Sunday's Mother's Day. I said, oh, okay, that's cool. That'd be nice. You get to watch the kids make breakfast for Siobhan. And,
and you get to clean up?
Yeah.
You should have stayed camping. it's going to be a busy paddling summer this year.
I wonder what the bugs are going to be like.
I don't care.
I think they're going to hit early. It's been a mild winter.
I don't think they're going to hit as heavy.
You don't think?
No. No, because they're not all up in droves eager because they've been able to feed all winter. It's been so mild, they haven't disappeared.
Yeah.
It's been, we've been eating like pigs all winter. So we don't need that early summer droves, that killer mentality. We'll just take it easy all
the
summer.
The lakes didn't even really freeze over, so there's no real ice out contest this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
can you lake ice over?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was still frozen up there.
Huh.
But down this way, it's going to be nothing.
So I remember Lake of Two Rivers, for the most part, was not fully frozen, I think,
it was over at New Year's.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, it was frozen at New Year's because I couldn't go out there in New Year's because that was my plan.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
I had to do between Rock Lake and...
Mm-hmm.
But, it was still frozen up there, but I don't think it hasn't been as cold and as solid as previous years.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I don't think they're going to be all that bad, but I always say that.
We'll see.
Yeah. It's the ticks now everybody's worrying.
Yes.
Getting all worked up about, right?
Well, and so with ticks, the big key thing for keeping the tick population down is you get like minus 30 for, you know, a week or two or up to 30 days, and it kills like a good 80% of the ticks. Mm-hmm. But since we're not hitting those low temperatures, it's just going to be a bloom of ticks this spring, right?
Yep.
Every year they're getting more and more, and as things get milder, certain species of ticks are migrating further and further north as they expand their territory due to mild winters, and so there is that.
Well, my theory,
mm-hmm.
and you're welcome to it, take as much precautions as you can and just go out and enjoy yourself anyway.
Yeah, you have to.
You get a tick, you get a tick. If the bugs are bad, the bugs are bad.
Mm-hmm.
So be it.
Yep. Just got to make sure you monitor, like for us, we make sure that we take a good gander at the kids' legs and stuff and make sure that they're not getting any burrowed ticks because, what is it, they say you get a good 12 to 24 hours before they can start passing on the bacterium to cause Lyme disease.
I thought it was if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. Yeah, like that's Spider-Man. What they said.
Something like Spider-Man.
I'm Tick Man. Right? The blue tick or something like that? Wasn't he a cartoon?
Something like that,
Oh, maybe it was a blue beetle and the tick. Something like that.
I can't remember.
I don't know. But, no, you know what? I mean, the other thing is you can sit inside your bomb shelter and
wait
out till winter.
Exactly.
And then complain about the winter. So, no, I'm just going to go out, take whatever precautions I can, and hope for the best.
Enjoy and that's what it's about. It's about the precautions. Just like you're going to wear your dry suit in the winter, you're going to be a little bit more cautious with ticks in the spring.
Yep. Maybe I'll wear my dry suit all summer.
Well, there you go.
Right? Can they burrow through a dry suit, you think?
Can you imagine how ripe you'd be
inside? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. My ripeness.
I'm making some stew.
Hey, you heard about the crotch pot? I got a whole body pot. Oh, that's going to be a ripe meal in there. No, just pour the beef ravioli right in. Open a couple of cans, pour it right down the front here. I'll zip on up.
Yep,
by the time we get to camp, it'll be all...
Let me jog that portage a couple times.
Nothing says, good.
Dinner's almost warmed up. I can feel the pasta noodles getting softened.
Oh, yeah. I went to order one of those, eh?
Crockpot?
Just to...
It's always out of
stock. Always out of stock.
It is way too popular.
Wow. That's what I'm thinking. Because somebody out there apparently is ordering them. Because they'll be some. Like, they'll say, oh, there is some. Yeah. And then you go to order it and they're all sold out all of a sudden. Yeah. Like, is there a big lineup of people waiting?
I guess.
A waiting list for them?
Well, there is a waiting list. You get an email on the email notification list.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to put myself on an email notification list.
Yep.
We got the crotch.
If you go to their website, there's an email notification list you put your name in.
Wow. How do you know this, Derek? Are you on that list?
I am. I haven't seen anything from them in a while, though. So,
because you figure if they're selling that many.
Yeah, they build it more often. If you build it, they will come.
Mm-hmm. But apparently not.
Yeah.
Anywho. Speaking of planning for trips.
Oh, okay.
How's that for a segue, Pally?
I thought we were talking about crotch pots.
Crotch pots and trips. Yeah. Scott Miller. put himself in the book, the Guinness World Book of Records, last year when he and three others paddled the length of the Mississippi River.
Oh, 16 yes.
days, 20
and
hours.
He cut 16 like minutes. A bunch of days off the previous record.
Yeah.
Like, well, I remember when he finished that, it was like, what? He cut that many days off? I can't remember how much shorter it was, but I think previous was like 21 days or something, and he did it in 16.
They did it in 16 hours, 16 days, 20 hours, 16 hours. Wow. 16 days, 20 hours, 16 minutes. Faster than anyone has ever done it before.
They did have the weather and water
flow. Oh, everything outside. Everything aligned.
They had a lot of luck.
Well, now he and paddling partner Scott Duffus are preparing to set a new paddling record with hopes it will dare others to beat it. They plan to launch their Winona Jensen 18 racing canoe the headwaters of the Minnesota River.
Huh.
In Ortonville on May 9th, paddle nonstop until they reach the Old Mendota Bridge in Fort Snelling State Park. So everybody's doing, I mean, that seemed to be the thing, is all of a sudden everybody's wanting to do the Mississippi.
Yeah.
Like, okay, it's been done. Let's move on. Distance is roughly 320 miles or 515 kilometers. So you're not going to have to take, you know, like 3 months or whatever to paddle the whole thing, sort of deal. Or this one's 16 days. Compared to more than 2,300 miles or 3,700 kilometers for the Mississippi. So 320 miles, 2,300 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 320 is much more doable.
Yeah.
So he was asked, what's the point of paddling these kind of distances? He says, the whole point is we both know the beauty and magic of paddling on rivers is so astonishing and underappreciated. They want to help others discover that magic. Miller and Duffus intend to establish a Minnesota record system similar to what they already exists for long-distance trail runners. I didn't know something like that existed. In which paddlers can record their times for traversing the state's rivers and possibly some of its larger lakes as well. So by doing this, it's just the beginning of a bigger project by the sounds of it. With GPS technology, anyone can take on the challenge of setting records for their favorite paddling waters. And Minnesota is the perfect place to start, as the state boasts 35 different water trails to paddle, representing 4,500 miles or 7,242 kilometers of adventure. That's a lot of waterways.
That's a lot.
They point out that there is a renaissance going on in the state with a growing interest in long-distance paddling. It's a great sport. You don't have to be an Olympic athlete to enjoy it, and it's for all ages.
Hmm. Yep.
See, so you can get your kids in a canoe, one paddles, one steers, and you just sit in the middle and tell them what to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All ages.
I would ride the princess seat. They can do the paddling.
What could possibly go wrong? this adventure came after about because Miller was looking for a challenge. He felt that his fitness level was rapidly declining. He asked Duffus, who had served on the support team for last year's world record paddle, if he'd like to join him on a long distance race on the Snake River this year. But Duffus suggested that they do the Minnesota River instead, and with that, the training began.
That's what you need. You need the motivation.
Yeah. Right? Well, yeah. I mean, if you've did all that fitness and everything mm-hmm. for that big trip, and then afterwards, what do?
Yeah.
You sit at home, you drink beer, eat pizza and donuts.
And we've read articles in the past where somebody poo-pooed the fact that somebody's doing these, these fast races where you're mm-hmm. seeing how fast you can do a river, this, that, the other thing. It's like, well, you're not even smelling the roses. You're not even smelling the trees and seeing the scenery. And it's like, well, you know,
this is a different type of adventure.
Different people have different motivations. And something like this, if you want to achieve a good result, it's going to make you practice and train all winter long. And and if people need that motivation to get out there, to stay fit, to do whatever, then hey, all the power to them. I'm not going to poo-poo somebody else's idea of how they want to enjoy the outdoors. It's I enjoy it my way. Other people enjoy it their way. And
You do you, boo.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. No, you know, I mean, you look at people that do whitewater kayaking. They're not stopping to smell the roses or anything like that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Miller is 48. Duffus will be 67 when they launch.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Actually, there's a guy at my work that's in his, I think, early 60s. And I show him pictures of some of the places I go. And he goes, oh, I would love to do that. What's stopping
you? Yeah,
And he stopped and thought about it. And actually, we had a conversation today. And he says, just a matter of getting up and going and doing it. And I mm-hmm. don't exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Get off your butt, go out and do it.
Yeah.
They've been training, and they've made a recent trip to the river's headwaters to explore the challenges posed by snags, low water conditions on the first stretch. Cause, yeah, I mean, it was shallower right at the headwaters, you know, and narrower and stuff. You're going to get the fallen trees and all that sort of stuff, right? They can only guess, but they believe their 320-mile paddle will require around 80 hours on the water. That's realistically not that long.
Yeah. That's
like 4 days, not even.
Yeah.
Not even 4 days.
It's not a lot.
They'll keep the canoe on the water at all times. They have a rudder on their canoe that is controlled by foot pedals in the stern and bow.
Really?
Yeah, that's cheating. Right off the bat, I'm calling them out. It allows for times when one of the paddlers can take a short nap as the other keeps the craft on the go. Is this like a Tesla canoe? You can take a snooze and it just keeps on going down the river?
It's on autopilot.
What the? Their decision to make the state's namesake river their first in this attempt to promote long-distance paddling is easy to understand. Miller previously paddled the Minnesota River upstream in May of 2005. He and a partner undertook Eric Severade and Walter Port's epic 2,200-mile adventure to Hudson Bay on the 75th anniversary of the long-distance paddle, as told by Severade in his book, Canoeing with the Cree. Duffus, a retired Lutheran minister, grew up on the Minnesota River in St. Peter, has his own love for the state's namesake river. He had attempted to paddle the length in a solo run 2 years ago. Gale force winds of more than 25 miles an hour, consecutive days of temperature in the 20s, which is below zero, followed by cold rain and flood waters, convinced him to scrub the ever. I think somebody was trying to tell you something.
Yeah.
Being in good physical shape is important, but there is much more to long-distance paddle racing. Strategy, teamwork, mental attitude, a good support crew, paddling techniques all make huge differences, Miller says. Luck matters, too. We were just talking earlier about luck in paddling and stuff. Water conditions and weather play a very big role. Most important is safety. The two plan to do some nighttime paddling to prepare for their upcoming run, well aware of the hidden rocks and snags in the murky waters of the Minnesota River. You have to always be fully prepared for the possibility you might end up in the water, says Miller. Pair have already a support team lined up for the adventure. They will be posting updates on their Facebook page, Mississippi Speed Record. So they're just reusing that Facebook page. They hope to be able to provide information on their progress and possibly video clips as they paddle, which means they'll probably have a GPS unit that you can follow as well, I'm sure, because I think they did that last time. So cool. Another thing to follow. It's the first one I've heard of so far this year, big marathon trip. I'm sure there'll be more to follow.
That's exciting. So they're creating a new trip. They're a new goal for other people to follow. Yep. And it's like they want to be the leading edge of it, of this new challenge, as they say.
But, you know, something like this, when you're looking at 80 hours, so they call it 5 days at tops, right? Anybody can take 5 days. I mean, you got Saturday, Sunday.
Then three
holiday days.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's your 5 days.
Yeah.
You know, you had a couple extra days or whatever to travel, and then the following weekend. You know, you got 9 days right there to do something like that. And you can go and say, hey, these guys did it in 83 hours. We can beat that. And then go do it.
Yeah.
You drive down, you do it in 79. It's
documented.
And then hopefully somebody
16-day effort that you have to take your entire vacational allotment.
Or are these unpaid time. Ones going up to Hudson's Bay, 2,200, you know, kilometers and your portages. And yeah, I need 3 months off work. Can I have it? Yeah, you might as well just keep on going after the three months. Yeah.
Don't bother coming back.
Yeah, yes. So, yeah, we'll follow that one. Like I say, it's starting in a month, and it sounds pretty cool. And, yeah, you know what? If the idea behind it is to sort of throw the gauntlet down.
Yeah.
And people go, oh, well, yeah. And then add more and more river systems. And, the purpose is to get people out there.
It's to inspire people to try something new, something different, challenge themselves.
And get out to all these other water trails and stuff like that. Then I'm all for it.
Everybody needs reasons and excuses to keep fit. We're not an agrarian society anymore. It's not like we're all working and tilling the farm fields and stuff.
We
have to find different motivations to keep us fit and healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. I walk to the donut store now as opposed to driving.
I'm going to earn that donut.
All right. I buy 12 donuts to bring home and 3 more for the walk back.
This walk is making me fat. I have to stop walking.
Right?
I can't afford the weight gain of all the walking I do.
All the walking. You'd think the weight of those carrying those donuts would help. I just don't understand, Doc.
I don't get it. I walk several kilometers every day.
With my donut fuel.
Anyways.
So I was sitting here eating a donut, doing some Googling. There was a photo online that I saw. There's a bunch of people on the shore of a river. Some of them were dressed up. There was a person standing in the river, and they had this funky, like, old-style costume thing on. Their face was painted green.
Okay.
Green gloves and everything. They were standing in the river, and they had a large key. Like one of those old, like, skeleton key sort of things, like a brass key. Yep. But it was a big, like, homemade, probably about 3 feet long sort of thing. The headline read, "The traditional ceremony of unlocking rivers opened the canoeing season in Czechia at the weekend." I could not find any other information on this, but I'm intrigued. What is this tradition, and how long has it been going on?
What's it called? The
Unlocking Rivers.
Unlocking Rivers.
And the only thing you're going to find is something from Prague Radio or something like that. Couldn't find anything else about it except this photo and that. The traditional ceremony of unlocking... You just found it, didn't you?
That's like the Wicked Witch of the West.
Right? Unlocking Rivers opened the canoeing season in Czechia at the weekend.
For the big yellow key.
Right?
Hmm.
No other information. I was Googling. I was putting so many different combos of words and that in. Couldn't find anything about this. So if anybody knows what this is, for all I know, this just could be a bunch of goobers that said, hey, let's go down the river, we'll get a picture, we'll make up some baloney story, the news will come out, and then we'll have a good laugh. I don't know. It could be something like that, or it could actually be a real ceremony that dates back to, especially with the whole, and there's somebody else on the shore dressed the same way.
Yes, I can see her.
Right?
Yeah. I found the website, the Radio Chechia. It's Czech radio.
Yeah. But it just leads right back to that picture.
Yeah.
And that small... There's no story. No story with it. Nothing.
If it's traditional, is it a secret tradition?
I don't know. It's like a secret handshake or something.
It's like Fight Club. You don't talk about...
Yeah. First thing you do about... The first thing you... Rule of unlocking river ceremony is... We don't talk about the unlocking the river ceremony. Yeah. Weird, eh? So, yeah, if you just type unlocking rivers and Chechia, you're going to find that picture.
I found another one where the guy's twisting a key in the river. Symbolic unlocking of the Vltava marks start of a new boating season.
But there's no other information.
Yeah, there's nothing here.
So if anybody knows anything, drop us a line. Let us know. You can contact a message over Facebook or Sean at paddlingadventuresradio.com. I'm interested in if this is an actual real ceremony.
Yeah.
And where we can get some information on it.
Hmm.
Seems kind of weird. Maybe we ought to start something here.
Unlock the rivers.
Unlock the rivers. Release the hounds. Be kind of neat.
Yeah.
Right?
It would be.
Big pomp and circumstance.
Symbolic opening of the giant, like the key to the city. This is the key to the city? No, this is the key to the river.
Right? Dun, dun. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was, that took up way more time than it should have in my day.
But there's no info.
That's why it took more time than it should have.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no extra info laying around on that at all. So, again, if anybody knows what the dealio is with that, then please drop us a line because we're interested. We've talked about rafting in India an awful lot.
We have.
Because there's so much of it going on now.
Yeah.
You know, after, you know, there's been COVID.
There was accidents,
avalanches, floods, you name it. It happened. And everything's coming back. All the rafting companies are starting to come back over the last couple of years. So it's building up.
Yeah.
Came across this one, and this one opens up some questions for me.
Okay.
So Himachal Pradesh is a state in northern part of India, situated on the western Himalayas. It is one of the 13 mountain states and is characterized by an extreme landscape featuring several peaks and extensive river systems, perfect for whitewater rafting. The Himachal Pradesh High Court has directed the Deputy Commissioner Kulu to examine and recommend an upper age limit for individuals participating in kayaking and other river sports. Court also emphasized the need for senior citizens to produce a fitness certificate before engaging in such activities.
So they've emphasized the need. They haven't made it law or have they?
No, this is, they're in the court right now.
Yeah, they're trying to force this.
So there was, So I'll get into something a little later here about what happened. But it is desirable to fix upper limit to persons who are intending to do kayaking or associated river sports, and also to prescribe the necessity of senior citizens participating in such activities producing a fitness certificate. The desirability of having capability to swim may also be required prescribed, was ordered by the Chief Justice.
So,
decisions were passed as a follow-up to a previous directive issued in November 2023, where the court scrutinized the adherence of safety regulations in adventure sports, specifically river rafting. Now, the court has taken note of shortcomings in safety measures and pointed out, because there's been a couple things we've talked about.
Yeah.
This is it. Point out several rafting operators were not complying with Rule 11B of the River Rafting Rules 2005, which mandates operators to possess two rescue rafts or a combination of one raft and a kayak. So basically, if you got a raft full of people, down it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But you're supposed to have
another
couple rafts with or to help get people.
Availability to rescue the people.
Right. And a lot of them are going, yeah, forget that.
Yeah.
The court had been then directed the deputy commissioner to file a report as to what active measures have been taken to implement these rules, how many operators were penalized for not following these rules in the last 2 years, and what other effective steps were proposed for ensuring that fatal accidents do not occur.
Hmm.
Building upon previous order, the court's recent decision focuses on further strengthening safety protocols in adventure sports, particularly in light of a tragic accident involving the death of a 65-year-old tourist. While mandating the necessity of senior citizens to produce a fitness certificate before participating in such activities to ascertain the physical fitness and suitability of older individuals for these adrenaline-pumping endeavors, the bench asked the Deputy Commissioner Kulu to examine the aspect and make appropriate recommendations in this regard. This matter has been posted to the 18th of July, 2024 for further considerations. So they said, here's what we want to do.
Yes.
Find out. Is this what we should do?
Is this feasible? Can we do this?
And then in July, we're going to come back and we'll find your findings and we'll make a discussion.
So are they making a... So the way it's written here, where they talk about the upper age limit and then the desirability to have a capability to swim, are they saying that the people who are older need a they need to fix a limit as well as be able to swim, or is that separate? So when you have upper limit, but also everybody needs to know how to swim.
No, this is just gear. Everything I see is all geared towards older people.
So
seniors,
if you're 30 and you don't know how to swim, then you're fine.
And that's my big thing is, what about the fitness of those that aren't?
Yeah.
Like you got grandma who's wants to go out and experience something she's never experienced before.
Yeah.
She's 75 years old and can you swim? Are you fit? You need to prove that you can swim and that you are fit with these certificates. But what about big old don't eat eating Bob? just launching down the old brisket and lasagnas and beers and donuts.
We apologize to all the Bobs out there.
We apologize to all the Bobs. The names may not be true people.
Names may not reflect actual people.
And events. But... okay, so dude's out there, and his family says, hey, this is going to be fun, and he doesn't want to go, but he goes anyway, knowing full well, A, he's 300 pounds and not fit, and B, he might float because of his size, but he ain't swimming.
Yeah.
Right? So my thing is, if you're going to do this, you can't just, aim at the old folks.
Mm-hmm.
You got to aim at everybody. You got to use a scatter gun and get them all. then it becomes a money issue.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Save grandma.
Yeah.
Sorry, Uncle Bob. You're a goner. So, I mean, you got to give them kudos because they are
they're
looking at the safety thing, and it's becoming, and I think this is just the start of, something
I think there's a lot of people out there that have spent their lives, I work with people who have not really done much for vacation. And so maybe they're just like, you know what? I spent my entire life working or my entire life being this or that, and I've never gone out and done something, and gosh darn it, I'm going to do it all now. I'm 67 years old, and I want to go whitewater rafting in India.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Well, because you can afford it now.
Yeah.
You got the time. You got the money saved up.
Yep.
You can go.
I'm 92, and I want to jump out of a plane.
Wait, with a parachute.
With a parachute, right? This is not a going.
I can either confirm or deny.
You're not just going out big, are you? Oh, no, yeah, you can give me a parachute, sure.
He's so light, he'll just waft down in the breeze anyway. Yeah, it's that's my sort of thing on it. So they are going to say, look at it, all their things, and there is the sort of hint at the background. They're not coming out and full out saying it. They're just saying, hey, there's a lot of shady things going on out there that we need to be taking a peek at.
They see that the rafting operators and the whitewater operators are not following the rules, and they're skirting the rules. So it's like, okay, let's crack down on these guys. At the same time, we need to be a little bit more cautious of the tourists that come to this country and do the whitewater and make sure they're fit, they're healthy, they're capable, and they're going to survive this event.
Yeah. Well, do you remember the fight that broke out between the two rafts there last year?
Oh,
and they started swinging stuff. Oh, man, that was full contact rafting.
Whitewater paddles have sharp Schlarp. Have sharp plastic edges. Give me the rest of that edges. Beer, buddy. They have sharp plastic edges.
Yeah.
It's like, I wouldn't want to get whacked with one.
So, yeah. Anyway, so that's what's happening in India right now. In India, they're starting to hopefully make a crackdown on the unsafe raft.
Yeah.
And it's only beneficial, too, because if anybody hears that, oh, yeah, you go rafting, there's a chance you're not coming home. If you go to northern India, people aren't going to go to northern India.
No, I know. Yeah, you start losing too many tourists.
Yeah, but if you can see that the courts are starting to take them to task and there's...
So it'll give tourists that sense of safety. Oh, look, the government's taking charge. They're going to make sure that I'll come home safe. So more people will spend their money. And
safety second opposed to third. And that just brings the tourists in, so.
Yeah, it's safer. Yeah,
hopefully we'll find out in July what happens.
Yeah, even if it's not safe, they need to have that perception that it's safe.
That it's safe, yeah.
It's all about perception.
We haven't had an accident since last year. Have you ever paddled the French River?
I never have.
Have you never?
I want to. I want to go.
Have you never?
I visited the French River Visitor Center. On the way back from a trip with Mike Burns, we stopped in and checked out the visitor center and walked the big stringy bridge thing. And
yeah, the big stringy bridge. The suspension bridge?
That thing, yeah.
For lack of a real term?
It's a stringy bridge.
The big stringy bridge. Where are you guys going? Oh, we're going to go check out the stringy bridge.
It works. It's accurately portrayed in my mind. I can see it right now. It's a stringy bridge.
The suspension bridge.
Yes, that thing.
Well, I paddled there all the way up to Georgian Bay.
Yes, you have. Yeah.
Yep.
I know a lot of people have done it, and
it's
a
beautiful area.
Yes, it is, and I do want to go some year soon, but maybe I'll get the family out there. The problem is it's too popular. It tends to be very busy, from what I've heard.
Yeah.
I haven't been there, but I've heard that it's busy. You can have a hard time finding campsites, and when you do find campsites, they tend to be a little bit rough around the edges and ransacked.
Well, the ones that if you want to get out to the bay, you're basically camping on big, flat rock, open rock.
Yeah.
But when we were there the one year, there was some great aurora.
Oh, yeah.
Aurora Borealis.
Aurora. Is more than one aurora.
Aurora. Northern Lights.
Yes. There we go.
Yeah, there were some nice Northern Lights going on the one time. And we saw a couple baby rattlesnakes.
Massasauga rattlers?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are they swimming or on land?
On land.
Yeah?
Yep. Yep.
I've seen one once, and it was swimming. It was probably about 2.5-3 feet long. Well, maybe an oar. It was a good size.
Yeah. No, I've only seen the ones on Georgian Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just, like I say, they were just tiny. So
yeah.
Well, the reason I ask.
Okay.
I've actually posted on our Facebook page. Yeah. There's a video trailer. TV Ontario.
Yeah.
Which you can go to their website and I could watch some of these other shows. TVO Original. Tripping the French River continues the hugely popular tripping series with a mesmerizing paddle on the French River from Lake Nipissing to Georgian Bay. Huh. Documentary takes viewers on a 110-kilometer paddle in a cedar-strip canoe on one of the rivers that helped form Canada. So there is tripping Niagara. Tripping a couple other places that they do. A lot of it's like drone footage and stuff, but it's from ground level, that sort of stuff. So it's pretty cool. So this is the next one. Paddling the French River is both a step back in time and a way to see all the great flora and fauna that Ontario has to offer, says Mitch Azaria, executive producer at Good Earth Productions. I don't believe there is another river in Ontario that has as much personality as the French. There are sections that feel like a lake. There are rapids, waterfalls, abandoned towns, soaring cliffs, historic lodges, and stunning narrow channels used by voyageurs that are just barely wide enough for a canoe. And I can full on attest to that one. and actually, there's one place Can't remember the name of it because it wasn't there. It was marked on the map Devil's Cascade or Rapid or something like that. You go around this between these two points,
yeah.
These two cliffs, and they're supposed to be a really short, like 10-foot section of rapid.
Yeah.
It wasn't there.
I think the water was too high.
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, I think the water was high. Excuse me. But just going through and is absolutely beautiful, and just the change in geology. You know, you can start out where the tree, lots of trees, and by the time you get out to the bay, it's all rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cliffs and flat rock and big. So you definitely need either a freestanding tent or know how to use rocks as pegs.
Yeah.
Because unless you bring a rock drill, yeah. And don't, if you're bringing your hammock, you're just calling that like a blanket because there isn't any trees. Tripping the French River, the journey begins in the winding sections of the upper river where thousands of voyageurs once ferried countless beaver pelts and supplies. Perched on the bow of the canoe, viewers will ride through thrilling rapids on the way to Georgian Bay and the Great Lakes. Online shorts about tripping the French River will premiere alongside the documentary, highlighting the edible plants along the river, the history of the river's cottages, and a story of a ghost town whose remnants can still be seen along the shoreline. Wish I knew about that.
Hmm.
TVO original Tripping the French River at 8 p.m. Eastern on April 21st on TVO's Today's website, TVO.org, and then just search for tripping and it'll come up with all the tripping video. Actually, if you go there right now and check out all the, just type in tripping under search, they'll be there. Or you can just go under the documentary thing. They'll also be on your YouTube channel, smart TV apps, and the broadcast channel. Sounds like a good one to watch. Kevin Kellen had something to do with this too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think they came to him asking him for information on it and where to go and stuff like that. And so, yeah, he's quite happy that this one's coming out as well.
Cool. So, I'm going to have to set my DVR to record.
Yeah, take a peekaboo at that one.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, like I say, even if you're at work one day and just bring up TVO.org.
Yeah.
Right? TV Ontario, baby.
At work?
Yeah.
I can't do that at work.
Why? Your lunch break.
Corporate assets.
on your phone.
I could do that. I could do it on my phone.
See? Bring it up on your phone.
Yeah.
TVO.org.
I'll do it at
home. Search for tripping and watch.
Mm-hmm.
Watch. It's beautiful.
I'm going to set the DVR to record because it'll be good to maybe entice the wife and the kids to, hey, look at this. This is a potential trip.
You'll just have to make sure that you get a site with a Thunderbox. One of the sites we had, mm-hmm. our Thunderbox, yeah, it was just
a log
tied between two trees.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as they know beforehand.
Yeah. Yep.
Right?
I am training the kids to do something like this. They're getting more comfortable with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on to something else here. Our friends, Pam and Tim, from the Super Good Camping podcast, check them out if you haven't yet, put a good reminder on their social media this week. Keep our forests safe and enjoy camping reasonably. As we embrace the beauty of the great outdoors, let's remember the importance of fire safety amidst Canada's ongoing wildfire situation.
Yes.
Before you set up your campfire, make sure check current regulations, fire bans, and restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Maintain a safe distance from flammable materials. So don't set up your tent right next to the fire.
No, don't.
Yeah. Use designated areas for your fires like metal rings or rock pits. Don't go into the crook of a tree because it's going to block the wind.
We've seen that.
I have seen that.
Don't move the fire pit. The fire pit is, yeah, an established location. And so if it's an established fire pit, that means there's no roots underneath it. They usually find a durable surface to put it on. If you move it, you might be putting it over roots.
Yep. Never leave your fire unattended and be aware of underground smoldering risks. I believe you just said that.
Yes, I might have.
Extinguish fires properly. It doesn't mean just like pee on your fire. You need to put some good water on that fire to make sure it is out. You know what? If I come up onto a campsite that people just vacated and that fire pit is soaked, I have no problem with that.
No, exactly. Yeah, you know what?
I mean, I'd be happy if it was still smoldering a bit that I could just throw firewood on and
But it should be soaked.
Keep water nearby and select appropriate firewood. Respect your neighbors and leave no trace. Let's protect our forests and ensure a safe, enjoyable camping experience for everyone. And my personal note, let's not have a repeat of last year's camping season if we can avoid it. Fire bans and canceled trips due to forest fires and smoke sucks.
Yeah, and it was particularly bad with the smoke coming. Well, we saw it on our trip, smoke coming out of Quebec when the wind shifted. And it's just like so many of the fires are human-caused, human-made, right? Either by accident or on purpose. And in the case of Quebec, there is a lot of on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not, I don't know why you, what purpose you would, or what pleasure you gain out of burning the forest down, but don't do it.
No. So, that one from Pam and Tim of Super Good Camping Podcast. Like I say, go give them a listen. They got a lot of good information if you're into camping. And it's not just paddle camping, so check them out.
The last one's exciting.
It is. I'm going to get a little bit of a preamble here. I've been having conversations with a few people lately about some, just from things I've heard and have been dwelling on and sort of making my mind up about. But the conversation I've been having lately is storytelling dead? Trip logs are becoming the same old, same old. You have to ferret ones out that really grab your attention these days. You know, I mean, blame it on the glut of YouTube videos, the lack of variety in paddling videos. Maybe I'm just getting cabin fever. But I'm having a hard time getting excited while watching these videos because there's no real storytelling anymore. It's all day one. We got up. We paddled. We stopped. We ate dinner. We did some fishing. Day two, we went to bed. Yeah. We sat around the fire. Day two, we got up. We paddled. We did some fishing. We stopped.
Yeah.
We made camp.
Very dry. Very. It's repetitive. Like, this is day one. Yeah, it's day like seven. A military ship's log. It's like And also, I think what contributes to it is the way social media is done nowadays. You have like Instagram shorts, YouTube shorts, TikTok, and you're, so everything what you're used to seeing is proper video from 15 plus minutes long, and they tell a story and they talk about this, that, and now it's like crushed down to 10 to 15 seconds. It's a quick short, maybe maximum 30 seconds, and it's like, where are we going with this? Like, are we trying to drive our attention spans shorter?
Yeah, but even some of the longer ones even still aren't, it's the same old, same old. Like, all the only thing that changes is who you're paddling with, your destination. Yeah. I'm sort of finding that.
But I think what the problem is with technology, people are able to put out what they would call a product, but they don't have the skills to tell a story. And so they're not telling a story. They're just giving an anecdote. Mm-hmm. They're just saying this happened or look, sunrise or whatever. It's like, so people aren't telling stories as much anymore. And it's just the way that our electronic society is moving. It's like, we're not into the storytelling aspect where there's the build up, the climax, the conclusion, yada, yada, yada. Just like you were learning.
And then we all died.
And like, you know, you learn how to write a story in high school and whatever. It's that nowadays it's just like, oh, look, this guy made a TikTok. He's famous, so I'm going to do it his way. And it's like, you know, there's a way to be able to tell a story in a short amount of time. And if you don't have the skills, learn the skills, but don't just hey, it's a 10-second blurb. It's like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah. So that's sort of where it comes around is my – and one of the comments that was made that went around there is people complaining about the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show and like that going, well, it's just YouTubers blabbing about the same thing we see online. There's no real – it's all the same stuff.
So go there in person and experience it. Don't watch the YouTubers.
So – and that's sort of what's brought it about is like, is storytelling dead? Mm-hmm. There's no real stories anymore. But then, dun, 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 I came across this. Okay. Our good old buddy, Frank Wolf.
He's a good storyteller.
He's a good story. I like Frank. Like I said, I met him last year at Canucopia. We saw each other across the big crowded hallway. Yeah. And, you know, just, I like Frank. There's just something about him
I think it would be really rewarding to sit around a campfire and hear, listen to him tell stories.
Yeah.
Like, because he is, right to the heart, a storyteller.
Yeah.
He can build a story. He can tell the story. It's like it's we've chatted with him. We've interviewed him. I've read his books, and so he's a really good storyteller. Yeah.
Now, before we go any further, I don't want to poo-poo people. Just to use your term of the evening, I don't want to poo-poo people from going out there and doing their videos.
No, yeah, absolutely.
You do. You come out.
Yeah,
I'm at a point right now where I think it's just that there's so much.
There is.
And I'm looking for something different. And that's a personal thing with me. So if you're doing your videos of a trip you just did through, you know, whatever, you know, 15 different provincial parks or something, then, oh, here's what I liked about this park. Here's what I liked about this park. Whatever. Or here we, day one, day two, day three, day four through Algonquin
Park.
Do it. Yeah. Go ahead, do it. People are going to watch it. People are going to enjoy it. I may give it a thumbs up if I watch it. But I'm looking for stories.
Yes.
You know, something that's not just a cookie cutter thing. So I came across this on the Explore magazine's website. Frank Wolf wrote an article about an upcoming 800-kilometer kayak trip he's doing with his buddy Mark Skye. Now, Mark is currently on a self-propelled trip from British Columbia to Argentina. So no motors, no, not so boats and walking and bicycles, as that sort of thing, right? Frank is flying down to meet Mark and paddle around the Darien Gap from Panama to Colombia. There's this big section, I think it's the Sea of Darien or Darien Sea, that they're going to paddle around. So they don't go through some of the bad spots of Colombia. In the article, Frank writes, he's now approaching the Darien Gap, the swampy, roadless, and notorious border zone between Panama and Colombia. In order to avoid this area, he's decided to paddle the coastline around it. And this is where I come in. I'll be flying down to join him for this section in mid-March, bringing with me a couple of track folding kayaks. Meeting him in Panama City, we'll assemble our kayaks, begin the 800-kilometer journey by portaging around the first part of the Panama Canal into Gatun Lake, where we will make our way to the Caribbean Sea and then down the coast to Cartagena, Colombia. The adventure will be cultural odyssey mixing with rough seas, crocodiles, mosquitoes, stunning scenery.
Sounds amazing.
Right? Sounds good on paper.
Yep.
But what do they say about even the best laid plans?
Yeah.
If you go to Frank's Facebook page, Frank Wolf Facebook page, he's been making some updates entitled A Night on the Edge of the Darien Gap. All intents and purposes, this is a paddling story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's photos and there's film, like videos and a couple things like that. And right now there's three parts to it. Part one, he said, so it was a couple hours. I'm not going to read everything. I'm just going to breeze through some of this. But I tell you to go to his Facebook page, follow him because he's good.
Yeah.
And read the full things and look at the video and that.
He draws a picture. And so it takes a good author, somebody who can put the words together. Like, I can visualize this. You know, you get a really good book and you can fall into it. And it's like you're watching a movie reading the book. Mm-hmm. So this Frank is really good at drawing a picture.
Yeah. He said, so it was a couple hours before sunset when we entered the Rio Atrato, a vast river network that drains the Darien Gap. Everything was submerged and dense, no possible place to camp, so we meandered to the village of El Rota, a few kilometers upstream to see if we could stay the night. Whole village was on stilts, and at first the people were amenable to us staying on a platform there. They helped me get my boat out and unload too, until the head man of the village strolled in and told us to leave. We left and with few options departed the river on a 10-kilometer night crossing to the next point away, hoping for firmer ground. The winds were forecast light through the evening. In the distance on the point, there was a single flashing light, which made navigation easy. So we paddled across, though. Lightning flashed, skies darkened, the wind quickly amplified. Soon it was breaking all around us as we focused on that lonely light. Mark is somewhat of a kayaking novice and has done amazingly well in heavy conditions for the past week, but this was turning heavy in the dark. So all of a sudden, it sounded like a novel more than...
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
As we approached the light, we saw there was at least a building or two there. Then with our headlamps on and the surf jacking up upon approach, a couple of powerful flashlights shone on us from shore. With us approaching the final break and not knowing if we were about to hit a rock, shoal that may destroy our kayaks, I called out to Mark to paddle back out. Through waves that were breaking right over us, he miraculously made it beyond the break. We rafted up and pumped out our boats. We paddled down the shore hoping for a softer landing, but the wind and waves kept intensifying. When I felt we were in a zone that seemed smoother, I had us raft up one last time. Being out here in the dark in a storm was the worst place to be. We had to get to land, though we had no idea of it, if it was piled with rocks, mangrove, marsh, or beach. We were going to let the wind and the waves take us together to our fate. Slowly but surely, we got pushed in by the storm. Wave after wave broke over us as we held on, and then finally touched sand. It was a beach, and yet this was just the beginning of the night's adventure. To be continued. So that was the one day he posted that. And you're like, what? Okay. So, that's cool. Their adventure.
I'm waiting for
what's
the next
happening?
Update.
Yeah. Like, is there lightning?
Intrigue.
All that sort of stuff. Part two. We double-checked our low-lying beach location after our blind landing, and apparently, at high tide, particularly with the rising wind tide, the whole point we were on would be underwater in a few hours. On the maps, it looked like we were not on land, but in water. I prepped dinner, kept an eye on the incoming sea, while Mark headed down the beach in the darkness to look for higher ground. Strangely, about an hour later, several sets of lights were headed my way, and from the inky night, a shaky Mark, sniffing dogs, and a dozen men in military fatigues, armed with M4 machine guns, emerged and surrounded me.
So remember, this is Colombia.
And this is like happening now, right? Yeah. Like this
is just a couple days ago.
Yeah. You brought reinforcements, I see, I said to Mark. He was in no laughing mood, however. And that's why, like, because that would be me.
Yeah.
Who's your buddies? He'd walked to the lighthouse to tell people that we were fine as they'd shone their lights on us in the water during our battle with the crashing surf. Instead of a lighthouse, though, he rolled into a Colombian naval base, was quickly detained as half a dozen guns were trained on him. He thought he was dead, since for all he knew, he'd stumbled upon a cartel lair. The base commander at first accused him of being a thief, but Mark managed to tell them we were on a kayaking trip and camping a kilometer away. Apparently, the whole peninsula is a naval base, not marked on any maps, and no one unauthorized is allowed to be there. So all the soldiers marched down to our site, picked up everything from our camp, brought it back to the compound as the wind howled and lightning flashed in the sky. They held us in a sweltering room with a lonely bunk under 24-hour guard watch and said we would be brought to Turbo by the Coast Guard to be processed the next day. We were only a tantalizing 20 kilometers from the finish of our paddle around the Darien Gap, and it looked like our dream of completing it had bizarrely imploded. To be continued in part three.
Yeah.
I am not going to read part three.
Oh.
But.
I have it in front of me. I read it.
Go to Frank Wolf's Facebook page. Yeah. Read part three to what happens.
Yeah.
There's videos, there's photos, and this is what I'm saying. Like, there's the story
yes.
that would go, because they're filming stuff as well, right? Frank does.
Yeah.
And have you ever seen any of Frank's other videos or films and stuff? I was first introduced to Frank Wolf's films, must be 15 years ago at one of the film fests now. The Paddling Film Fest. It was the real Paddling Film Fest mm-hmm. back then. And I immediately was like, oh, this is awesome. There's so much story behind everything he yes. does. Yes. There's humorous bits. There's the whole. Yeah, there's the whole, here's our trip, here's what we're doing. But there's a lot more to it.
Yeah.
Right? And this is what he's doing with this. Like, they're just going, okay, we're going to paddle along. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Oh, look at the waters. Oh, look at this fish. Look at the scenery. It's awesome. It's fun. Oh, the bugs bug me. Blah, blah, blah.
And then suddenly.
No, and then boom.
And then suddenly, Saturday Night Live skit.
Right? I like I say, go to Frank's page and follow him. Tell him Sean sent you for no other reason.
Yeah.
It won't get you anything.
No.
So at the end of seeing all of the, and like I say, it appeared at the right moment,
yes.
the story, right?
Yeah.
I sort of kind of think, storytelling's not dead. You just have to find the proper storyteller.
Yes. And so the average person, or like for me, I would just blurt it out in a photo or two and a sentence or two mm-hmm. and on Facebook and say, oh my God, this happened. You know, and people would embellish it, whatever. But he tells a story. He
yeah.
made it into a story. And it's almost like you're reading a chapter book. And it's
right?
Like, yeah. It was well written, and I'm thinking a lot of people would have just kind of flippantly looking for likes, but he's just like, I don't know, I'm going to tell a story here.
Yeah.
I don't care if you like it or not.
Yeah, it's come out rather well, so. But, I think we need more storytellers.
We do.
And like I said, and not to take away from people that are throwing all their videos out there, the trips they're doing, because mm-hmm. people want to see this stuff too, but we need some people out there telling stories with their videos
yes.
and stuff like that as 100%. Well. So that's, I don't know if you call that a rant. It was a concern maybe or something.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, you know what? We've maybe not in so many words, but like you had this discussion with other people, but me and you have also talked about this over the last couple years. And I do see that with the way that social media and, you know, Instagram and YouTube shorts and stuff, I do feel that we're losing a skill set. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to maintain it, but you know, some people who may have gone into extensive storytelling, chapter books and whatever are now going to be just doing, you know, Instagram stories and whatever. And it's just like, you know, we need people to, if you have a skill, if you have a storytelling skill, you need to exercise those just like you do with your muscles. You need to exercise those mental muscles and tell stories.
I mean, it's cool to write a book.
Yeah.
And if you can do it in audio, because I haven't actually had the time to sit and read a book for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I used to read like nonstop, but it just so busy doing so many other things over the last couple of years that it takes me so much longer to read a book now. I'm slowly turning into you, I think.
I just got a new book.
And it's sitting right over there on that shelf. I'll get it to it in 2037. It's one thing to sit there, and I mean, I'm a big one now that I have audiobooks.
Okay, yeah.
So my drives to and from work, and mm-hmm. sometimes even at work or at home here, I'm listening to somebody while I'm doing work.
Yes.
So that book I would regularly be reading, I'm now listening to. All Kevin Callan's books there?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not audiobooks yet. I don't know why. Kevin needs to get off his butt.
Yeah.
But something like this, if you could do a book, or not a book, but if you can do a video.
Tell a story.
And tell a story, mm-hmm. even if you narrate the story.
That goes with
the video or the pictures or something like that. We need more of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many people now that have gotten into just the trip video trip logs.
Well, the guy who sent the video about the rubber ducks, he told a story.
Oh, I totally forgot.
And it was
about
a good
that.
Story, and it was humorous. He kept throwing these, and so there was these little zingers that he kept throwing in there, and it's like, oh my God, that's funny. And like, you didn't even see the little joke coming, but he, at the same time that he's making you laugh, he's telling you a very interesting story, and it's based on science.
So we talked about those shipping containers.
Yes. Yeah.
Dropping off and opening up, and there's phones and stuff in them. So Doug Begbie sent us a little thingy saying, so your conversation from yesterday's podcast I listened to today about shipping containers, and it reminded me of this. And he sent a little video. We'll post this too. We'll share it. 29,000 lost rubber ducks help map the world's oceans. All because of a shipping container containing 29,000 little rubber duckies.
Yeah.
Fell off a cargo ship, broke open, and went out into the oceans.
Yes. So somewhere's halfway between Newfoundland. No, on the other coast, yeah. Other coast. Halfway between
China
and Tacoma, Washington.
And Alaska.
That was Tacoma, and up Washington.
In, was it Washington as well?
Their destination was Tacoma.
Yeah. The western coast of North America.
The Pacific Ocean. Somewhere's halfway in the middle of nowhere. They were in a storm, and they lost a bunch of containers. This one had ducks.
Rubber duckies.
And it ended up being a really neat scientific discovery of the ocean currents. And because these things ended up everywhere on the planet. And so it was really, but the story that this guy told on the YouTube video, it was like really interesting. It did a really amazing job of relating the story, making it funny, making it relevant. So it's like, aha, that's awesome.
That's what we're looking for. We're looking for stories, with videos and stuff. So
this guy's a storyteller, this YouTube guy. What was the name of the YouTuber? So half of everything?
Oh, no, it was a half skills. It was one of those learning thingies.
We'll share it.
Yeah, we'll share the video. Definitely share the video. Thank Doug Begbie for sharing that with us. And again, yeah, go to Frank Wolf's page if you want to see part three of
it's
what happened.
It's hilarious.
There is some videos. There's some pictures and stuff. And yeah, I definitely want to get the first-hand, full-on account from Frank when he gets
I
back.
I want to hear the story that he's not telling.
Yeah. So, Frank!
Tell me more. Yes. Dish the dirt.
Tell us. But no, he says the guy, the people down there, the soldiers in that were
they ended up
so
being,
friendly.
Yeah, it ended up being a very positive encounter, but unexpected.
Unexpected, so. And that's all I've got.
Yeah, that's all I
got,
too.
That's it this week.
Yeah.
Wow.
But the storytelling thing, that's a good point to close on.
Yep.
We need storytellers.
We need storytellers, people. Come on. I'm planning a bunch of trips this year, and there's going to be a lot of photos and video stuff coming out. Just based on that last topic we covered.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm really sort of doing side projects, and it's going to involve some storytelling videos and
beauty.
Presentations.
Mm-hmm.
So, made for TV movies.
Women's Network?
And the Oscar does not go to.
Yes, exactly.
This week on the Hallmark Channel, Merry Christmas, Canoe Boys. You got anything else?
I do not.
Really? You come all the way out here.
Well, if I must tell one story.
You complain about my dog wiping his boogers on you.
She always does that.
She likes you.
If I must tell one story, I noticed it on the way into work today. So we didn't have much snow. Didn't use our snow shovels. They're always sitting out in front of the work. And so there's one there that's sitting in a corner of the building outside, and it's full of water, leaves. And there's a small tree or shrub starting to grow out of the pool of water in the shovel.
I say leave it there.
I'm absolutely leave it there. I'm gonna start taking photos like whenever I think about it. But I want to see how.
Put a little sign: Do not touch.
Do not touch.
Do not move. Shovel.
Serve this little growing tree.
Right.
Fill with water when necessary.
Environmental project. Do not touch.
But it was neat. It was like kind of makes you think. It's like, yeah, we didn't really get much snow this year.
Yeah.
This shovel hasn't been used much because it was filled with
the wood handle is sprouting.
So it was interesting. So if I need to add one last thing, then that will be it.
Awesome. Awesome. And I hope your week goes great. We had a big spider in our house.
I always have spiders in my house.
This one was a bit bigger than normal.
What's disturbing is when you see the spider and you look back, it's like, okay, now I don't see it. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know it's there.
So when somebody sees a spider and the first thing they do is take a shoe out and swat it.
No, they eat the bugs.
How do you know that spider isn't thinking to itself, that's Derek. That's my roommate for 5 years. And all of a sudden,
I was on a trip last summer. Or was it the summer before? Anyways, we're sitting around the campfire. And we're having morning coffee, and I look down, and I see this spider right beside my chair. So I just kind of, I point my finger at the spider to shoo the spider away, and I just barely touched her. Just to like, you're a little close to me. Move that way. And as soon as I barely touched the fur on her back, and like 10 or 15 baby spiders, blew, went everywhere. It's like,
and she pulled a knife on you. Yeah, because they ride on the back, right?
Some spiders, the babies ride on their back. But it was like, what was that?
Well, boys, time to pack up and head on to another spot.
Gotta go.
Feet, don't fail me now.
But it's like she just exploded with all these babies just flew off her back and is like, what?
Yeah, no thanks. No, we got... I put a post on my personal Facebook page. I zoomed in too, right? So it makes it look like it's the size of a tarantula, but it's like the size of a dime.
Oh, okay.
Right? And I just said, we got a new person living at the house. I'm going to call him
Charlotte.
Gitta.
Gitta?
Get the hell out! Oh, what a great week. I'm just waiting for summer to full on. And
I know. Yeah. I'm feeling it. It's coming. It's going to be a good summer.
It will be. There's going to be a lot of I think I got like 30 paddle days already booked.
Oh, wow.
Holy cow. Yeah. Yeah. Woo. All right. Well, if that's all you've got, that's all I've got. I would ask the dog, but she left us earlier.
Oh, yeah. She's abandoned us.
Yeah. Well, if you want to find more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, all your favorite podcast downloading sites. We are on YouTube as well. And a couple of people last week, I want to thank you very much for my glaring boo-boo. I just reposted the previous week's show on our
YouTube. Did you?
Yes. Because I get everything all scheduled, right? Like all our social media stuff gets scheduled. Yeah. So I just sit down and just brrr, and I guess I forgot to change directories.
Hey,
and I
Sean, just click. A rerun?
Hey, here's episode 425. No, your picture says 424. And you're actually running 424. I'm listening to it. Dag nabbit.
So people are actually listening to the YouTube
stuff. So thank you, people.
That was a test to see if anybody was listening. That was a test
to see who was listening. You've won absolutely nothing so now but we know my gratitude. That
three people?
Yeah. If you want to go to our episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, you can download or stream all our episodes there as well. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.